Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
The mainstream authorities, the pro-vaccine mainstream authorities, acknowledge that vaccines don't work 100% of the time. The CDC website says 5 to 15% of vaccinated children aren't immune. And the CDC itself admits, of course they don't promote this particularly, but they admit on their own website that that's why most outbreaks start in unvaccinated kids. Of course, there's always, in vaccinated kids. Outbreaks usually start in vaccinated kids because vaccines don't work in everyone. Now, they'll still blame it on the unvaccinated kids. But what I hear anecdotally from people around the country is it's usually a vaccinated child that gets sick first, not an unvaccinated kid. And that's probably because vaccines do have a suppressive effect on the immune system. That's been documented in the medical literature. But if vaccines don't work all the time, and even if they did work all the time, you have children who, for medical reasons, can't be vaccinated. So they say, well, everybody has to be vaccinated so that we can protect the ones with medical exemptions and the ones whose vaccines don't work. But all of this rests on the flawed assumption that you have to get a high level of immunity through vaccines in a population to achieve this herd immunity effect, the so-called herd immunity theory, which has been disproved over and over again. Many, many documented instances in the medical literature over decades documenting disease outbreaks in highly vaccinated populations. And there's been a lot of fuss in recent times over the measles, apparently been some measles outbreaks, and saw an article recently about that. They always immediately in the press and the media jump on unvaccinated people, but you know what, folks? Many, many of these outbreaks over the years and recently are occurring in highly vaccinated populations. They immediately say, oh, it's because all these unvaccinated kids, everybody needs to run out and get vaccinated or revaccinated. But that just isn't a position that is always supported by the facts and by the data. Back in the 1980s, there were measles outbreaks around the country, and many of them occurring in highly vaccinated populations. In fact, the CDC documented one instance in which a 100% vaccinated population had an outbreak. Now, there was a researcher who looked at this phenomenon, measles outbreaks occurring in highly vaccinated populations, did what they call a meta-study, where they go look at studies, a collection of studies, and they analyze this. And so there's a published study looking at the studies or the instances in which measles occurred in highly vaccinated populations. And the conclusion of this meta-study, and this is cited in my Dispelling Vaccination Myths article. You can just type in Dispelling Vaccination Myths and probably it's posted on a number of websites around the world, has been at least in the past. You can probably find that pretty easily. It's at mercola.com, among other places. And there's a copy of it posted on my own website, vaccinerights.com, if you want the references for this. But the meta-study, which concluded that as measles immunization rates rise, measles becomes a disease of vaccinated people. Let me spell that out again, because what this really suggests is that trying to achieve widespread immunization is counterproductive, trying to maximize measles immunization rates. As measles immunization rates rise, measles becomes a disease of vaccinated children. So should we be clamoring to get as many people vaccinated to the best of our abilities? Or should we be taking a step back and saying, what's the deal with measles? And I was contacted a few years ago by a British solicitor, as an attorney, equivalent of an attorney over there in England. And he showed me information from medical school textbooks talking about measles both before and after the vaccine had been introduced in Britain. And before the vaccine had been introduced, measles was referred to as a benign disease. You get a fever and rash for a few days, you recover, and in rare instances, it may be there may be complications. I mean, there's no 100% safe route anywhere. Welcome to life on planet Earth. You know, anytime you get in your car, you're at risk of being injured or killed. So there's no such thing as saying nobody's ever going to be hurt or killed by a disease, but there certainly is no such thing as saying nobody will ever be hurt or killed by a vaccine either. But measles was described as a benign disease, and then after they introduced the vaccine, suddenly measles became this dreaded killer that everybody needs to avoid at all costs. And the language, the textbooks, have been rewritten to support pharmaceutical profits, or certainly at least to support the broadest possible administration of vaccines, which would of course necessarily mean promoting and supporting pharmaceutical profits. And the healthcare industry has been systematically working to influence the training of medical doctors for many decades. And this has just reached a point where the blatant conflicts of interest are just really, really disturbing and disgusting. That's a whole topic unto itself. Maybe we can come back and look at that, or find a medical doctor guest who can come in and talk to us about that sometime. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. Coming on shortly, my wonderful co-host Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and today's special guest Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project, expecting Rich to join us in just a little bit as well. And then we'll be looking at some of the current events in the news, vaccine news and politics around the U.S. and around the world. So we're going to go to break here in just a little bit, but we encourage and invite you to stay with us. Thank you for being with us if you already are with us. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after break, and we look forward to catching you on the other side.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website, at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing.
Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com.
But wait, there's more.
You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Embellus and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have the right to know the new world government has been identified, and they thought they just cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up, speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city. All you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Warriors, you are the resistance. I like that line. We're back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Great. We'll move into the next hour here talking about some vaccine news and delighted to have with us today special guest. But first, Debbie, you with us, and how are you doing this afternoon?
Thank God I'm doing well. It's a gorgeous sunny day, and it's been that way all week. Everyone needs to get out and go for a walk at some point in their day.
Doing that here on this end of the state as well, Debbie, and forecast is to get even warmer during the week, which is at least on this end of the state, it's going to be in a very pleasant temperature range. So maybe on the warmer side of seasonal here, but perfectly okay. I believe Rich is with us. Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project. Rich, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, Alan. Good afternoon, Debbie. I hope that you two are doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
for
being
here. Doing
great.
Thank you.
Well, how about we just dive right in? Rich, I'm going to pass the ball to you, if that's okay. You got anything you want to jump in and start with here?
Well, sure. I'm certain we can find some articles and interesting things to speak about, like always. So why don't we just take the first article here off the list. And this one is from Mercola.com. And I definitely like to keep abreast of Dr. Mercola and mention a lot of his articles because I have a lot of admiration and respect for him and the fight that he fights. But this article in particular is entitled Rabies Vaccine, Drop from the Sky. And the article basically, the setup is the article talks about rabies and actually statistically speaking, what a rare disease that this is, pointing out in 2009 that there were 4 cases of human rabies in the U.S., and in 2010 it actually dropped to 2. So it's not exactly, a very prevalent problem if we face reality. He goes on to state here in this article that even at the turn of the century, sometimes when we have the notion that, you know, the diseases were running out of control, that rabies-related deaths were only about 100 annually in the U.S. But anyway, on this backdrop then, the article goes on to discuss that the Texas Department of Health is planning to drop experimental rabies vaccines from the sky. And that just sounds wrong, Alan.
Rich,
who is saying this? I'm really in a kind of blurry about this. I did not read the article on Mercola.
Oh, you're in for a
This
treat,
is an actual study. Fact, or is this a joke, or what?
This is actually something that has been experimented with in the past, some too. And so I was really glad to see that it came up again. But, Rich, go ahead and elaborate a little bit there. Let's not leave Debbie hanging anymore on the vaccines from the sky.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the Chicken Little syndrome here. But the Texas Department of Health is planning to use helicopters to spread 100,000 rabies vaccines in 2 counties. Basically, the vaccines are contained in a plastic case, and it's coated with a fish meal to entice wildlife to eat it. And apparently that's any and all wildlife. You know, this is targeting, you know, any kind of critter that might carry rabies. So basically they're just going to drop these into wild areas for animals to eat. So, I mean, nobody really knows if this is going to work. And it's just, I don't know, it smacks of an assault on nature to me. And
it reminds
it just
me
seems
of
like
the...
a huge, I'm sorry.
No, excuse me. I was just going to say, it reminds me of sort of the GMO thing where they're experimenting with GMOs in one field, and they say, don't worry, we're going to keep it in our field. But, of course, the wind's going to blow it over, and so it contaminates the non-GMO fields. And then to add insult to injury, the ones who own the GMO crops go over and sue the other farmers for using their patented GMO products or whatever. I mean, just really crazy. But when you're just going to take a vaccine and just sort of randomly drop it, you know, all over an area. It's an interesting idea, but it doesn't sound like maybe they thought this through.
Right, and it's going to be impossible to really predict the consequences to wildlife. And like you're saying, I mean, this could have consequences outside of like their targeted kind of goals and areas. And it's also just the idea that they're going to go to these lengths and spend this kind of money on a disease, you know, like we're saying, that we had a couple of cases of this in the United States in 2010. so it's just, again, I mean, why do the states face, focus on these kind of measures when it seems like we have so many valid problems to worry about? But anyway, it kind of reminds me
that... Did they explain what is the purpose in dropping these rabies? What is the purpose in this?
It's hard to get the animals to come into a clinic and roll up their sleeves. So,
well, that's right. Basically, they just want the animals to eat this, and then allegedly they would be, you know, vaccinated or immunized against rabies. Therefore, you know, the wild animal couldn't carry it and then bite humans or domestic animals and spread it. So, you know,
they have
no
idea who's going to eat it. They have no idea, you know, how can they calculate that?
Well, that's exactly right. Venison and various game is eaten, or just they don't know what animals are going to eat it. Probably a lot of animals that aren't, carriers of rabies could eat this stuff. It's just sort of a one-size-fits-all approach. I mean, when they start dropping things from the sky, it just is excessive in my book right off. This article goes on to point that, you know, they're spending that the U.S. is actually spending about $300 million per year on rabies prevention. Now, you know, rabies is a terrible disease, and definitely, you know, we do want to kind of take a reasonable measures against it. But, you know, it's a very kind of tiny problem given that kind of price tag. $300 million a year is a lot. And, again, we have to kind of think about and prioritize the issues that we deal with. And what might need funding. And, you know, for a lot of people who live in big cities, which is the great majority of the people, this is such a minuscule problem. I mean, it's not really even an issue on the radar at all. And so it also kind of makes me think, you know, every time, you know, of course, we take our pets to the vet, you know, they're very adamant to give them rabies shots and follow-up rabies shots, and now there are various other shots that they're pushing. And so, you know, it's interesting to kind of take the vaccine issue and project it over onto the animal kingdom and then think about what exactly are the implications there. But anyway, I mean, kind of what strikes me about this is it just almost seems like some sort of military commando approach to drop all this stuff, you know, from helicopters into the wild. It reminded me, Alan, we had an article posted, I think it's been several months ago, you'd posted an article talking about a similar thing going on, and I don't recall the state, but it was out west, and they were basically dropping poisons to call the deer population. They're basically dropping some sort of toxin kind of disguised as food, and they kind of justify that saying, well, the deer population is overrunning, and then that causes problems, and I know that can be true, but it's just... it's just maybe a matter of sometimes how we deal with these things. You know, the ultimate answer would be to have our ecology correct such that, you know, the wilderness was full of the right types of animals to keep themselves in balance. But when we start dropping toxins and vaccines from the sky, that just really kind of gives me the creeps. And it also kind of gives me the creeps in the sense that, you know, doing that stuff on animals, you know, it can be kind of an experiment, kind of a dry run for maybe worse kind of applications of that sort of thing.
Well, we've known instances in the past where vaccines have actually caused the very disease they're trying to prevent. And, you know, you're talking about incidence of rabies, at least in humans, that is really, really small. Are we potentially infecting rather than inoculating some of these animals, depending on, you know, how this plays out? Have they experimented with this? And then maybe they have, I don't know, but have they experimented with this in a more limited capacity so that they have at least some point of reference for speculating on what's going to happen with this over a broad area? I mean, it's fish meal. It's probably going to attract predators, and that would be limited to animals like raccoons and skunks and, I don't know, badgers, whatever kind of animals would be in that part of the country. So it's probably not something that, say, you know, a deer is going to eat. But, of course, you never know. But just
or
the
children
idea.
Children playing.
Well, and that was the other, that's a really good point. Another thing I was thinking of too,
yeah.
Are humans going to be wandering around any of this? And somebody picks
right.
it up and doesn't know what it is, and is it something that poses a potential risk to humans or not? So
right.
It's like a minefield.
Yeah,
you
right.
don't
exactly.
really know. It's hitting this. You don't really know what's going to happen with it. You don't really have any control once you let something out loose like that. It's you know, like a mass inoculation or a mass broad-spectrum antibiotic, once you let something out into the environment, it's Pandora's box. You really don't know what is going to happen to it. You can do statistical analysis and predictions, but in reality, what do you really know?
But look at it for a moment from you know, let's play devil's advocate briefly here. You know, from the other point of view, there is rabies in some animals out in the wild. That's probably a fair assumption, if not something that is at least to some degree documented. And of course, you know, forgive me for being facetious or sarcastic earlier, but they're not going to come into a clinic. You know, you can't just send them a letter and invite them to come out, or, you know, post a notice and get them all to line up for their vaccination or for a checkup to see if they have rabies or whatever. So from the point of view of somebody who wants to feel like they have some control over this, what else might, and feel free to take this as a rhetorical question, guys, but if you have a thought, please share it. You know, what else might someone do? I mean, maybe the answer to that is what Rich was hinting at earlier, that, well, look, rabies is not a pretty thing, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, there are bigger problems that aren't being addressed. For example, in this Mercola article, he says there were nearly 2,400 cases of campylobacteriosis in Texas in 2012, and that's an illness that's spread by contaminated poultry. And it's an illness that can be deadly if it infects people with a compromised immune system. But Mercola points out, we're not hearing about widespread efforts to curb its transmission. And so maybe the underlying idea here has some validity, but are they just missing the boat? And what is it in either something wrong with an analysis, or is it a political-based decision? You know, feeding, quote-unquote, the company who's developing a rabies vaccine? You know, are we helping them to stay in business or make a profit? Is that why we're addressing this issue and not the campylobacteriosis or any of a number of other issues that might, from a pure numbers and health point of view, be better targets to spend this kind of money on?
Right, and I'm sure the taxpayers are picking up the bill, because this is a Texas Department of Health. So it just seems to me that, you know, it's kind of what you're getting at, Alan, is if we have a company making this sort of vaccine product, it's like somehow or another we find the regulators or state or local or federal government lining up somehow to support it and sort of going out of their way in dramatic ways to kind of overspend on this stuff. You know, this article does go on to give some other interesting stats. It's talking about over the last decade, actually, there have been a total of 28 people in the U.S. who actually died from rabies, which is about 3 fatalities per year, which that's always tragic. But it's really statistically not a very big deal when you think about all the media attention. I mean, this is the one kind of thing that we almost have a knee-jerk reaction to, rabies and how bad it is and how necessary it is to defend against it. But in reality, it's actually statistically a very kind of small occurrence. You know, I think about all the pets vaccinated with rabies. You know, a lot of these are say, house cats or animals that never get outside. We're talking extremely small risk. Kind of left to wonder what the effect of that rabies vaccine is on the animal, just like, you know, we know that vaccines have adverse effects on humans, especially when so many animals get so many rabies shots, you know, over the course of their life. And the article also goes on to say that, you know, most rabies that is contracted in the U.S. is actually comes from bats. And so does this effort in Texas even really address, you know, that fact? You know, is this something that bats, you know, bats kind of fly around at night and eat things flying in the air. I don't really think that the bats are going to be uptaking this vaccine. And so it just seems like, you know, I don't know, it just seems like misused funds and we really can't be sure what the effect of this is going to be, and it's all addressing a problem that really isn't a very big problem relative to other kind of major problems that we're struggling with. But I just think it's interesting because, you know, it's just the misuse of our technology sometimes, you know, to just sort of attack nature. And so it caught my attention.
Well, let me add one quick comment here, and then if either of you have further comment on this, please say so. But otherwise, let's move on, because there's so much in the news in the last several days here, so I want to try to get to as many of these topics as we have, as time will allow. But I, as you might know, members of different professions, and attorneys are in this arena, have to take certain continuing education classes and each year in order to keep their licenses. And I was at one of these, what they call continuing legal education classes, a couple of years ago, two, three, 4 years ago now. And an attorney was addressing the group who happened to also be at that time the Speaker of the House here in North Carolina. And he was talking about ethics in the legislature, which was kind of nice because attorneys have to take a certain amount of classes about ethics in the legal profession, but it's always about lawyers. So, oh, we get to hear something different for a change. So it was sort of refreshing in that sense. But he makes this passing comment about how if members of the legislature who had conflicts of interest didn't vote when they had a conflict of interest, we'd have maybe, you know, three people voting. So, you know, he just sort of shrugged off, you know, so we just, that, you know, no point in worrying about that or dealing with that. And it's one of the few times where I've been really glad that I didn't have my wits about me, because I probably would have said something I might have regretted. But I thought about this. It hit me wrong instantly. I just didn't have something clearly to articulate to respond to that. But I thought about this later, and the analogy that came to my mind, you know, it's sort of like the too big to fail thing. Oh, well, if you're too big, then it doesn't matter how bad you are, because we you know, you can do whatever you want if you're big enough. And there's that same sort of concept that was being conveyed here. And when I thought about this later, it was like, okay, let me get this straight. So what you're saying is, if I come home at the end of the day from work and my house is on fire and the fire is too big for me to put out with the garden hose, then I should just go on in and sit down and watch TV and blow it off. You know, so it's like, you know, if only three people can vote who don't have a conflict of interest, that doesn't mean that conflict of interest is something you can't deal with. That means that the wrong people are running for and being elected, and that the people who are in these positions as state legislators are not the appropriate people to be in that position. They're there for the wrong reasons if they get in there and have regular and significant conflicts of interest. So this is how the world works today. It doesn't work the way it pretends to, and it continues to pretend to work correctly, and probably the way these systems were designed is for the most part with good intentions and you know, under the circumstances, pretty well-designed systems overall. But if the way they are run ignores the intent and the rules and so forth, then, of course, it doesn't matter. You know, you can have the best system in the world, but if you've got corrupt people running it, it's not going to work. And this is, I would assert, how the world primarily works today. We have probably what are mostly reasonable systems, if not good systems, but substantially filled with people who are running them in an inappropriate or corrupt or dysfunctional way. And if conflict of interest is the rule of the day in the state legislatures around the country, as it is obviously here in North Carolina, and I don't see any reason why it would be any different in most other states, then what we have, you know, the answer to the rabies question in Texas is that somebody's getting money, and somebody either is in or has friends in the state legislature and so, or in the health department, and they set these things up so that they can direct state funds to themselves or their friends rather than have that be prioritized by what really is the most important need, where can we do the most good. And to the extent that that is the case, and I can't say for sure in the rabies case, I don't have objective information to back up my admitted speculation on that point, but I certainly have seen that with clear documentation in other instances in state legislatures. And where you have documentation of this kind of thing, this is wrong. This is not. I mean, we have some strong evidence of it in Texas. Here's an issue that's being addressed that is minimal in terms of the human impact, when there are so many other issues with much greater human impact. So either somebody is just not paying attention, or somebody's serving the wrong cause. Well, they're either doing that inadvertently or on purpose. One of the two, and neither one is good.
Right. Well, shall we move on to another article, Alan?
Sure. Debbie, okay with you?
I like to listen today.
Okay.
Keep going. There's so much stuff. I had the one about Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's scream. I feel as if maybe we should kind of announce it each week because I love what she has to say. And I don't know. It's kind of complicated, and it's possible that you could interpret it a little bit for me. Is that something you would like to do?
Oh, we'll take a shot at it.
Okay,
let's
see what you guys think.
Here. I actually had earmarked that that article too, Alan. Dr. Tenpenny responds to the UN anti-vaccine attack. Now, this isn't really an article. It's actually a video.
Well, I don't know if Debbie's talking. I think Debbie's talking about something different, but we can certainly bring them both in. Debbie, go ahead. Let's see if I'm correct in what I'm hearing. Because Dr. Tenpenny
If Rich wants to go ahead, let him do his first, and then we'll screen.
All right. Fine. Go for it, Rich.
Well, I was very interested in this, too, because, you know, I admire Dr. Tenpenny. I've actually had a lengthy discussion with her on the phone, actually, about vaccine issues. And so, in my mind, you know, this is the ultimate compliment to her, that she's sort of showing up on this sort of boogeyman list. But, you know, they've identified people that they basically are claiming are sowing incorrect information and misleading people about the vaccine issue, and that this is resulting in less vaccination, you know, a much lower vaccination rate, and so they're demonizing these people. But I was watching here a video of Dr. Tenpenny. She's on a local news station. It's WHDT Channel 9 with Gary Franchi. It was a pretty interesting. The interviewer was actually giving her a chance to speak, and I think she's very articulate and was representing our side of this debate quite well. But, you know, I just say kudos to Dr. Tenpenny. Keep up the good work. I know that Dr. Mercola ended up on that list too, as well as pretty much anybody who is being effective. So it's sort of like if you look at that list of people that they're demonizing, I think that's probably a short list of people who are doing good work and being effective in this arena. So
Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and myself, we do a Monday night show, radio show, and I was joking with him on that recently, you know, about how, you know, we really obviously aren't doing our job well because we didn't get on that list. So we're going to, redouble our efforts and see if we can't make the next one.
How did we not get on that list, Alan?
That's right. I mean, I'm offended. I really take that personally. So...
Well, you know, one thing I would like to say about this, and this goes pretty deep, so we perhaps don't want to pursue this too far, but, you know, this is the United Nations list, and we're also, you know, talking about UNICEF here. And these organizations have such a squeaky, clean image, you know. It's I just think a lot of that has been marketed to us. And, you know, while I definitely kind of agree with the notion of unity, and that humanity kind of needs to get its act together in the sense that we're all on the same page and pursuing, you know, the correct and ethical goals. I think, you know, what it comes down to for me is that the unity that we seek is a cultural phenomenon. It's a cultural thing, and unity that we seek as human beings. And the scary thing is to the sense that the way to unify us is with some sort of, you know, overarching, oppressive one-world government or something. So I think, like, the answer to unification is in the cultural sphere and not necessarily in the governmental sphere. But, you know, when most people see something coming from the UN or UNICEF, they just naturally, you know, kind of resonate that that's an organization whose credibility is, you know, beyond question. And so... I guess in that sense, it can be bad press, you know, for Dr. Tenpenny to have the UN, you know, it seems like such a huge, you know, global organization to sort of be criticizing a person. But, you know, I just kind of question a lot of times, you know, their goals as well, and then who really are they speaking for. And so anyway, I just put that out there. I think that can be kind of the problem sometimes when we're dealing with stuff like this. It's just... this image of infallibility with some of these organizations.
Well, it is an interesting dilemma because on the one hand, we can, you know, joke about it a little bit with some seriousness, or two, of course, about how getting on the list is an indication that you're having an effect, or they wouldn't do that. And by the way, this list was one focusing on the effect of social media on immunization rates, I believe, in Europe. So, you know, for people in the U.S. here to be getting, you know, having an impact through social media in Europe, I think is quite a fascinating phenomenon in and of itself. Of course, Dr. Mercola has enormous national and international reach, and Dr. Tenpenny certainly does as well, even though, does not have, like Dr. Mercola has, a team of people who are working to regularly put out alternative health information on a variety of topics, and then Dr. Mercola has an incredible list of carefully researched supplements and other alternative health products. They do tremendous research to pick the best things they can find anywhere and then offer it to the public. And so it provides a tremendous service both in providing free information but also offering really good products. But they both have, as well as all the others on the list. And Dr. Eisenstein and I also got another laugh, but again, on a serious point here, both of us went down that list, and there were a couple or few on the list that we weren't familiar with. So I said, oh, my gosh, I've been in this vaccine arena for a couple of decades now, and there's anybody out there making this kind of an impact that I didn't know about? And I find that... as you know, so that's a little, maybe a little arrogance on my part, but and humbling and to see that, but it also is just really fascinating news to me at the same time, because it means there are just lots of people out there. You know, every time I learn about a new what I would call major player in the alternative vaccine arena, I say, oh, how come I've never heard of this person before? And once in a while, it's because somebody's new to the arena, but often I keep learning about other people who've been out here for years, if not even decades, you know, spreading information, raising awareness. So there's just a number of different people and organizations around the world who have been involved in this vaccine arena in one capacity or another, sharing information, bringing awareness, helping to bring people up to speed on what's really going on. And I keep seeing more and more people coming into the arena, more and more people creating video projects, for example. Dr. Gary Null in New York City just came out very recently with a new full-length video called Vaccine Nation. I haven't had time to look at it yet, but I encourage folks to look at that. Most of the way articles we're talking about, things we're talking about today, folks, by the way, are linked as news articles from the Pandemic Response Project. And the website is, all three of these words spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com, and then there's a link in the upper right of each page to the news page. And at the top of the news page, if it's not there right now, it will be shortly, is a link to this new video, Vaccine Nation. Now, I haven't seen it yet. They interviewed me for that, so I don't know if I'm in there or not. I don't know if they used my interview pieces or not. Hopefully they did, and I'll be in there, because that was certainly an honor to be able to be interviewed by those folks. But they have just an impressive list of highly credentialed, knowledgeable experts in this. And Gary has just, he's been in the alternative arena spreading awareness of vaccines and other issues for decades, and he's just phenomenal, does phenomenal work, thoroughly researched and referenced every time, truly professional, so I encourage folks to look at that. We're at, if not even already past, break time again, so I'm going to hog the mic here for another couple of seconds to announce break and have us move on into break. You're listening to Vaccines in Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and special guest today, great to have you always, as always, Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project. And we will be back within just a couple of minutes, folks, so please stick around.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me, what legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights, or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic, great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com, and check it out and order it, Silver Leaf Tea.
I'm not a lab rat.
I'm not a lab rat.
My family is not a bunch of lab rats.
I am not a lab rat.
Thanks, but no thanks. 80% of the processed food in America has been genetically modified.
That's GMOs. That's GMOs.
You can't even tell what foods contain GMOs at the grocery store.
Because no GMO food labels are required. That makes us the guinea pigs.
Sounds like an experiment to me.
GMOs are scary.
It's up to you.
You're an adult. You can vote.
I can't vote because I'm a kid.
Vote yes. Vote yes. Please vote yes. Can I get a cookie?
Freedomizer, you have a voice.
How will you vote when initiatives are added to the ballot in your state?
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
We are back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and special guest Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project. Where did we leave off, guys? We got another topic to go to here.
Yes, let's move to a new article, and this one hits a little closer to home. This is relevant to North Carolina. I'm looking at an article that was published in ABC News, so the general tone of this article is pro-vaccine, but the article is entitled "Hundreds of North Carolina Students Suspended for Vaccination Lapse."
Okay, we'll pause for a moment here for the applause. Okay, no, go ahead.
I didn't read this. Hundreds of North Carolina students suspended from going to school because why?
Well, basically because they failed to get the Tdap shot, and I always think of that as DPT, but it seems like now I see that referred to as Tdap, or that's the diphtheria pertussis tetanus shot, all rolled up into one. But it's, the article is saying that 200 students in three counties hadn't turned in their certificate of immunization form to prove that they got their Tdap shot. And therefore, they were not allowed to go back to school. And you might recall in 2008, North Carolina passed a law that all incoming sixth graders had to get a Tdap booster shot within 30 days of the new school year. And so they're really enforcing that. They're really making those sixth graders get that.
What actually happened?
I'm sure that in most cases the children are buffaloed into getting the shot, and I'm also would guess that when the schools are enforcing this and warning the children and kind of kicking them out of school, that they're not freely informing them of their right to claim an exemption to this sort of thing. But anyway, we're seeing this more and more, that the school system is kind of used to enforce the mandatory vaccination scheme. So this is affecting mm-hmm. people locally. And, you know, I just hate to see this because I think...
This is quite frightening. I mean, this is frightening.
In what sense? Because the article, of course, is saying it's frightening because it's everybody's at risk of disease. What is your concern here, Debbie?
The forceful vaccination, I mean, giving full disclosure, full information to parents about these vaccines and their efficacy and things like that and alternatives, and they're probably not giving every opportunity for these students to know what their rights are. Do they have rights in North Carolina? Alan, from your point of view in terms of exemptions and waivers.
Well, first of all, in answer to that, I want to clarify that there are there could be, for any given individual, a marked difference between what one's rights are and what one may think their rights should be. So the fact is, as Rich pointed out, there was a law passed requiring this vaccine for school enrollment. So you either get the vaccine or you exercise an available exemption if you qualify for one, or you don't go to school. And in North Carolina, even if you homeschool, you still have to either get the shots or exercise an exemption. So, you know, in some states, if you homeschool, I think you get out of the requirements. Or, you know, for example, it's my understanding in West Virginia where they don't have religious or philosophical exemptions, only a medical exemption. You can homeschool, and then you don't have to get the vaccines. But here in North Carolina, my understanding is that even if you homeschool, you still have to either get the vaccines or exercise an exemption, keep on file at home your religious exemption letter. So a lot of people mistakenly say, well, there really isn't any such thing as a mandate because there are these exemptions. Well, I want to clarify something both technically and as a practical matter on that point. I'm going to respectfully disagree with it because there are mandates in all 50 states and every U.S. territory right there in the laws. You have to get these vaccines to go to school. The question is not, is there a mandate? The question is there a way out of it? And yes, every state and territory has one or more exemptions, but not everybody can qualify for an exemption. In the states that offer philosophical exemptions, perhaps you can say there that anybody can qualify for an exemption, but that is fewer than half of the U.S. states that offer a philosophical exemption for school enrollment. So this is a serious issue when you consider that the threat of infectious disease is, while always present, is certainly minimal in current times compared to 7,500 years ago, when there were widespread outbreaks, large numbers of deaths, and so forth. Now, we can discuss why the disease rates went down, whether or not and when is the risk or threat the same or not, and why, and so forth. But the fact is, we have nothing today or in recent decades that's anything comparable to the early 1900s and before, in terms of infectious disease. Yet, we have very, very clear, well-documented evidence that vaccines can injure and kill you. We have...
I might just say a comment that I feel as if, yes, there were infectious diseases that wiped out populations, possibly due to the measures that were being given, such as taking aspirin and not sanitary conditions, or whatever it might have been, and they didn't understand the focus of the disease. But today, the viral and bacterial elements that are out there are more virulent and more resistant to the types of medical treatments that are available, and that is even more, to me, profound in terms of the threat of infectious disease. I just interjected that.
Well,
go
ahead. It's a good point. It's certainly an evolving situation continually in many different aspects of it. You know, the overuse of antibiotics, which we've heard a lot, and I continue to see articles from time to time on this and what the effect of that has been, is to create these antibiotic-resistant germs that are much more difficult to treat. Some of our efforts to control nature have resulted at times in nature being even more aggressive or difficult to deal with than before. I don't think it's that we have to, I'm not suggesting at all that we need to submit to disease and just recognize that we're going to have a few thousand people die from these diseases every year, what have you. I think it's a question of how you work with nature that you can reach a place of balance where we truly minimize infectious disease and the adverse effects of infectious disease without causing any harm to ourselves in the process. Because we can debate whether or not vaccines even work or how well they work, but separate and apart from that, we're injuring and killing people with the vaccines, and there just isn't any data out there to tell us what the scope of that injury and death from the vaccines is. So there's just, you know, when people, in terms of what people's rights should be, nobody should ever be required to get a vaccine for a disease when we don't know, literally do not know, which is worse for you, the vaccine or the disease, or at the very least, we have no hard evidence to show you exactly how those figures, ultimately whatever they are, would be, because nobody's tracking those figures with any kind of consistency or accuracy. So there's no data available from which to make the calculation. And when you add to that things like the fact that the pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in criminal behavior, and not just a bad person here and there, you know, who doesn't pay his income taxes. We're talking about pharmaceutical companies that get criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars and even as high as $1 billion in a couple of instances in recent years. And so, again, nobody should ever be required absolutely to have a product from an industry that behaves in that manner. But we continue to have corruption not only within the industry, but within the media, or at least a control of the media, so that that information, complete information from which people could make informed decisions, is really difficult to get a hold of unless you act proactively and spend your time to go out there and dig and find it. And it's definitely there. After 20 years of doing it, I can tell you it is there, but you do have to do a little digging to find it sometimes. Well, anyway, I think I've gotten off on a bit of a tangent here. A couple of hundred kids, and Rich, I'm guessing that this article doesn't really explain in any clear way why these couple of hundred kids' parents didn't vaccinate them, or do they take a stab at that?
No, they do not. They mainly just kind of... The spin is just like always that because of these low vaccine uptakes, you know, we've been having pertussis outbreaks, et cetera. So it's not exactly, you know, in my mind, an honest article. But it's just interesting because it affects us here locally in our state. And one thing that this makes me think about, Alan, when I think about DPT, I've always associated that or thought of the DPT vaccine as one of the potentially worse vaccines. And perhaps that's because I read that book, A Shot in the Dark, many years ago, and that vaccine in particular was hooked with SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. So I guess I'm curious to know what effect maybe, you know, now we're talking about sixth graders getting a booster. I wonder if there's any kind of correlation that vaccine is equally deadly in older children. And I also wonder, you know, we're talking about vaccine exemption rights. And these students can claim these rights, and the schools and the government are never very forthcoming about that. But in this case, Alan, we're talking about sixth graders. So I assume, you know, probably the great majority of these students have already, you know, had the basic kind of vaccine schedule, or else they've claimed an exemption. And so if you're a sixth grader and they demand the kind of a mandatory booster, you might be in a position where you don't have quite as good of an argument for a religious exemption. And I'd like your comment on that. I mean, because if you've been vaccinating all along, it might be a little harder to kind of then say, oh, it's against my religion. So maybe some of these kids are kind of caught on the wire with that.
It's a really good question, Rich. And there, gosh, there are three or four, if not more, issues in just the last couple of minutes of your comments there. Bring me back to the legal question. I wanted, if I get astray here, but I wanted to address another subject real quick there. The early pertussis vaccines were what are called a wholesale vaccine, and the pertussis vaccine was identified as a vaccine that was causing serious adverse reactions, and they switched to the acellular pertussis vaccine at some point, and that's the A in Tdap or D.